Okay, we have the very popular Gray Duffel, substitute host for Bob Dobbs, the Andy Stokansky of Dobbstown.
I can't believe I'm on 2 weeks in a row.
I know. Well, you wouldn't be on, Greg, but this
no,
is
no,
important
no.
matter.
This is important, I know.
Isn't it outrageous what they fucking did?
Oh, well, you know, I went to look at that.
Did you hear, you heard me talking. You didn't know about it before, right?
Yeah, I went on to Facebook, and I refreshed the page.
Well, this is on your own searching?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really do it. I heard you say that something had happened, but we'll have to talk about that later. But then, you know, I was into Facebook, and I clicked on, like, the refresh thing, and then I see this post you made, and I see the video. So I go to the video, which I've already downloaded, by the way. I already have a local copy of that.
It goes into the ancient archive.
Yeah, I've already got that. I got that locked in. Okay. If they take that down, I've already got it. Okay. So,
so you just had to go to my Facebook page to see this.
Because I don't see any of this stuff,
right.
You know, normally.
Yeah.
So then I followed all your links to go and see these pathetic people talking about CKLN and reminiscing. And it's amazing they even have time to do that.
No.
Well, they don't have anything
time.
To do they?
Everybody's on Facebook. Everybody has time to do Facebook. You can't
hold
that against them. And they're only saying one sentence. They're not typing much.
Yeah, I know. It's very vapid. The thing that was shocking to me was, well, first of all, not shocking, you know, seeing that pasty-faced Bernard.
Yes.
That was, you know, that wasn't really shocking, but it was, you know, just horrible to see him there.
Did you ever meet him?
Oh, yeah.
Was he still there in late 2006, 7, 8, 9? Oh,
what they did was, he was doing this horrible blues show.
Yeah. Dr. Feelgood.
Yeah, I've got some great footage. I don't know whether I can ever show it.
Yeah.
But we knew that Bernard was going to get fired, was going to get...
Right.
Or was it, they weren't going to allow him to come down and do a show. So Danny and I...
See, guys, you know what I mean? Look what he did. You have to realize Bernard is... It is Neufeld versus Bernard, that 40-fucking-year history.
So we knew this, right?
Yeah.
We had advanced knowledge. So we camped out in the hallway. Okay.
Now,
like,
this
in
is
the hallway
that nobody cares about, but Greg and Daniel are eccentric. They're following this case of a kindergarten school or something.
Like, we were still at the station, but we found out something was going to happen. So we went down there, and we set up cameras in the hallway. All right?
To film him going home crying.
And we actually got and he didn't even really realize we were there until, like, near the end of this conversation he had. We were far enough away and, you know, nondescript enough.
Yeah.
That didn't click until the end that we were there and documenting him getting, you know, like, getting canned.
We
got to
show that. Let's post that on this fucking thread.
I know I've got it somewhere, right? I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot of footage. There's a lot of footage I got that I'm not sure I can ever
make this a real memory page. They'll delete everything, but we'll get stuff on there, and we'll put the whole fucking documentary on there over the next 3 months.
I mean, the thing is that the stuff we've got on recorded, on video, would be so controversial and so, like they'd hire lawyers to stop us from doing this, you know?
Yeah.
They would spend money to stop us using the footage. I know it, because... And they kind of know we've got this stuff, I think,
right.
But it's a stalemate. You know,
Let me say this.
Yeah.
Andy, he was only there in the mid-80s, 30 years ago, and he did well in the music industry. He went to L.A., but he's probably been only in touch with Bernard and heard about us all for the last 20 fucking years. You know what I mean? And that's why he immediately deleted me. He knows me from the Bernard side.
Oh, yeah, and Bernard would make sure that he would tell everybody, anybody he knows, all of the people that he hates.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be, like, top of his list.
Right. Okay, so,
that's my opinion. That's my opinion, Bob. I don't know that to be a fact. That's just my opinion.
Okay, you saw him getting talked to by management and fired? Is that what you got on tape?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what the details were. I don't know whether I think we knew that he was going to come down to the station. He was going to go and do his show, and the station manager at the time was going to tell him that he couldn't come and do his program.
And would this be before 2006, before he first got knocked off? Or?
This would be around 2007, I would say. Because we were... Yeah, it would be in late 2007, early 2008.
When you first got knocked off, and then you were off for a year and a half, then you came back.
Then we came back, yeah. It would be the part where we came back. And we were sort of on, you know, I wouldn't say great terms with the management, but it was barely tolerable. But
they had to, because you won the case, and they had to let you back.
Well, yeah, they hated us.
Yeah.
But they also... They also saw us as, because we were kind of enemies of the people that were their enemies, they sort of saw us as a...
Oh, yeah, an ally.
You know, as an ally, but, you know, they hated us even still. So, but sometimes they'd give us sort of information about what was going on, and the information was that Bernard was going to come down to do his show as normal, even though what he was doing was, he was, you know how he's sort of two-faced, right?
Yeah.
He was conspiring to get rid of them, or actively conspiring to get rid of the management.
Yeah.
But still coming down and wanting all of the perks of doing his program.
Right. Now, which management is this? Give me 5 minutes. When I get 5 minutes, or
yeah. That was
that guy, Mike.
Yeah. He's the one that we have video of him, basically talking to Bernard.
Yeah.
And saying, you know, you can't come and do your show anymore. And
that's pretty sleazy to fire someone like that, like not even to give them a notice or anything. Just, you know, what was their grievance against them? They knew that Dave Bernard was conspiring against Mike?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was being duplicitous, as usual, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And... He was. That's my recollection, anyway. But they didn't want to allow him in. They were all conspiring against the management and trying to undermine them and get rid of them because they weren't their people.
Right.
They needed. And Bernard, Bernard was doing that terrible blue show that he does.
Dr. Feelgood. Yep.
Dr. Feelgood. I don't know whether he was calling himself that still. Maybe he was.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah,
it was a horrible program.
I went over to look at Dave Bernard's site in the middle of this, his Facebook page, and there's a guy in the Blues Society that they honored like 2 days ago.
Mm.
He goes home and dies.
Oh.
And everybody's all in shock. Well,
that's a whole thing, this Blues Society.
Yeah.
There's so much drama about that thing. You would never think that... I guess with every group, there's some kind of drama. And I remember that the management knew this guy. His name was Eddie, I think. Eddie something. And he'd been shunned by the Blues Society.
I remember that case. Didn't he have something with CIUT also?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a whole scandal. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that guy just hated Bernard something fierce.
Yeah.
The new management deliberately brought this guy in.
New manager CKLN brought the guy in.
Brought him in to deliberately piss off
Bernard.
Bernard and the whole Blue Society thing and that whole clique.
Yeah.
And that was a whole weird thing. Eddie, I can't remember his name. But he couldn't even take it. When he went back, he says, "Look, I can't stand this. I can't handle it." You know, because he was caught in controversy again. You know, he just couldn't go and do his show.
You mean he was brought back to bug people, but he didn't like that context for doing a show?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is that there was all this drama at the station at that time because...
Yes, I remember you told me it bowl by bowl. The whole, yeah. I remember the Eddie thing. And there's a picture, maybe on Arella's page, of the CIUT people. They're still going, right? They won the battle. University of Toronto never went out of business, right?
No, they had trouble. What happened with them? I don't know if this is boring to everybody, but it's just between you and me, right? Bob,
right. Well, that's how it always is. Whoever I'm talking to is always about me and them, right?
But,
right, Bert?
But this is what happened.
Bert, you love this, right, Bert?
Yeah, it's fun to listen to.
Is Bert there?
You get the background.
We may or may not, but we could fucking post this, and they could all listen to what we're saying about them.
Don't.
You know what?
Don't do it. Don't
hold
it.
Back,
let them find them on their way. No, I'm not going to hold myself back, but don't. So this is what happened at CIUT, in my opinion, okay, from my research, and I've done a lot of research about it.
In my opinion, I'm talking to Greg Duffel. I'm not sure.
In my opinion,
radio.
I'm saving you, Bob. Saving you in a cheap radio by saying that. What happened at CIUT was, I'm not going to name names because I don't really know these people. You know who they are.
Yeah.
But because some of them were people from CKLN.
That's right.
But and some of them you've mentioned, you know, just in the last few minutes.
That's right.
But anyway, what they did was they were over at CIUT. CIUT started around 1987. CKLN started, what, 83? And CIUT got a license from the government to set
Greg,
up one of these.
Here's an important point. The article that they show with, you know, with Mike in the background, if you look at the little, I enlarged it, and I found out what we couldn't figure out last week. It was a year before, in June, 1st of July, 86, they raised the wattage. It went to 250, not 13. It says right there, the station recently went up to 250 watts. Remember we were wondering last week, was it 13 or 250? Well, it's right there in the article. I was really happy to get that solved.
Well, that was Adam Vaughan's biggest achievement, was that he got it it up to 250.
Yeah. But that
I think that it wasn't such a great achievement, and I'll tell you why. I can remember that it was at 13, and I could get that station out in Scarborough.
Wow.
Which is 13 miles away. Yet when they went up to 250, it got a bit dodgy, you know. So it got
bounced off the building
even in downtown Toronto, people complained they couldn't get the damn station.
Right.
So it didn't. I don't know. The technical specifications of that station were always poor.
Right.
And maybe got worse when people like Adam Vaughan took over that don't understand anything about technical stuff, really.
Right.
I don't think, but whereas the people who had actually got the license, it was a radio club at Ryerson for years, and they worked hard to actually get a license. And as soon as they got the license, these so-called progressive people just moved in on the station, kicked everybody out that knew anything about radio.
Yeah.
Technically or otherwise, and then took it over themselves, and then proceeded to over a few years ruin the whole thing.
Yeah.
And except for when you were on, and then of course that was ruining it further because they were undermining you all the time.
Yeah.
To get rid of anything that was good, they could figure out how to get rid of it and replace it with something really terrible
and dull
and boring.
Yeah.
And for the most part, but I mean, Bob's show was miles ahead of everything else that was going on. It was really the only thing worth listening to if you were to examine.
And I got the big articles written about me.
And how hard would it be? Let's say you have a radio station. I mean, look what you're doing when you're playing the music that you're playing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, would you call that hard? What you're doing there?
No.
Like
nothing.
It's easy, right? It's easy. You're playing what you like. You're playing stuff. It's easy. There's nothing hard about that.
No, take no brain.
these people at CKLM were making themselves out to be geniuses for playing records.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and not being under the thumb of, like, a top 40 thing. They're going, wow, we're geniuses. We're playing records. We're playing the other cuts on the album. I mean, that really doesn't take much, you know,
cleverness. Yeah, and they avoided spoken word because they couldn't talk. And they couldn't think.
No, they couldn't do that. So,
yeah, they couldn't
anyway,
think
okay,
talk.
So here's what happened.
Let's go back to what you were saying about CIUT.
CIUT. Okay, here's what happened. And I did a lot of research on this later because there was a lot... what I learned by doing the research, everything that these so-called progressive people had told me, and I'd done a lot of research in interviews about the
CIUT. I remember listening to you interview the CIUT guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they just do nothing but lie to you about things, right? Because they're always trying to do it from their, what they wanted it to be, and from their perspective, there's no reality as to what they don't know what the reality was. But what happened was, these people, some of them from CKLM, some of them not, got in there, and they had a lot of money there at CIUT.
Yeah.
That one was flush with cash, more so than CKLM. And they just proceeded to rip the place off and put expense accounts and getting cabs everywhere, a particular person you mentioned just in the last little bit, who now lives somewhere else in another continent, and allegedly.
Yeah.
So they just were ripping everything off, and it got to the point where the station was just on its last legs, with only after a couple of years of being in existence, or maybe longer. Anyway, it was around 2000, I guess. It was around. It's amazing how much you can undercut a radio station. Or one of these quote-unquote not-for-profits, and it'll keep going, you know, lurching along, and then it reaches its breaking point. And it reached its breaking point, as far as I know, right around the time that I started at CKLM.
2000.
Yeah. And I remember, and because when I was, I didn't really... lobby hard for that, you know, to take over the international connection. It was sort of a mistake that I even, you know, did it.
Yeah.
But the thing at the time, they said, they said to me, I think you're going to work out fine doing this, but, you know, there are a lot of people being let go from CIUT right now, and maybe, so they were thinking maybe, you know, that someone from there would come in and take over the program. Yeah, and I go, well, okay, whatever. But I didn't know what was going on at CIUT. I had no idea. It was all inside baseball type stuff, right? Because these people knew what was going on there. I had no idea about the politics, or I wasn't involved in that whole scene at all. So, what happened was that the things got so bad that they were on the verge of losing their license. And the CRTC was onto them, which is the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications.
And this is in 2001?
Commission. This is, 2000. Yeah, I'd say 1999, 2000, somewhere in there. And they put had weird people put in there to place, and then it was... I guess it had been run by the student council, but then the university took it over. And that was I later found out that was a big deal. The university coming in and taking over the student radio, the student radio station. Mm-hmm. And, but in reading, what I did was I went to the CRTC offices. I don't know why we did this. I just think we were maniacs. Daniel and I, we were just trying to gather as much information as we could. And one day we made arrangements. We got all the boxes. They took them, got them from Ottawa, moved them to Toronto. And we got all the history of CIUT. And we brought a scanner down into the CRTC offices here in Toronto, which are a very small office. And we set up shop there. And we just scanned for days, or for at least 2 days, scanned every damn thing that was in the boxes.
And you were allowed to do that because you're a public and it's a government public thing?
Yeah, they allowed us to do it. I mean, we brought our own equipment down, set up, and we just worked away at it for, we just tag team doing all of these scans, which we had done with all the CKLN material too. Whatever CRTC had kept in terms or had on file, we got everything so that if we needed it for any research we were doing at the time, we had it. But it was very illuminating what happened with CIT because essentially the university took it over, and that was the only way they kept their license because the CRTC didn't trust the people that were running the station, and it was only the university intervening, coming in and using their largesse and their credibility that allowed the station to keep going. And to this day, it is essentially run by the university, and the student council and all that has virtually nothing to do with the place.
Mm.
And then there was scandal after that. They had a guy in there that was a publisher of a community newspapers, and for some reason he was the station manager of the place as well. And some conflict of interest came up where he was taking money or something and he was very well connected person evidently. And
he's not the guy who did the homeless paper.
Not the homeless paper,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. But he got caught up in something and scandal where he was, I imagine, taking money from the place. So CIUT was a place where these progressives went in to rip it off, and then after the university went in and took it over, they brought someone in who apparently was also just took over and started ripping the place off.
And that became
known? In that way. It did, because they filed a lawsuit against him.
Ah.
I don't know what happened with it. And then his underling sort of took over the place, and he's been the station manager ever since. But those two guys were the ones that Daniel and I
interviewed
went
for
up
your
against.
Report?
Well, what happened was that we were disenchanted at CKLN because we moved into this new studio that was supposed to be so much better, and we got to figure out how to deal with the terrible situation at the old CKLN, like the one sort of pictured in that video that you've been discussing.
Yeah.
Although it was a little, it was substantially different than that.
Right, because in 85, that's 85 or 87, when I went back there in 95, there was, locked boards. It was all reshaped. Right.
Yeah, though they moved. That room was still there.
Yes, but it was all redesigned.
Well, actually, I'm not sure that the room that you see in that video...
That wasn't changed.
Not to a great extent.
But all around it.
All around it, yes, because they moved... That was the main on-air area, that room they showed. That was the on-air booth.
Yeah.
I mean, but it did not remain the on-air booth when I was there. When, in 2000, whatever it was, 13 years later, they had created another on-air booth.
Where?
It was right as you walked in the door.
Oh yeah. I did. I went on there for you.
And then there was an on-air booth. You'd walk in the door, and to the left was the on-air booth, and then there was another glass area on the other side, and then that little what was the original on-air booth, that little thing that you see in the video, that we would do pre-records in there. If we were going to do sometimes Daniel and I would decide, okay, I'd be going away for a while or whatever, and we'd bank up some programs, and we'd, after we're finished on Sunday morning, we'd move into that little studio and we would pre-record shows for future use, right?
Yeah.
So that we had, it was a fresh show, but we would do stuff that wasn't so time dated, you know.
Yeah, and this is when you would go to Montreal and work at the NFB.
No, no, it was after that. If I knew I was going to go out to see my mom or something,
oh,
or
yeah.
if we, you know, if I knew I wasn't going to be there for a few weeks, and we'd just bank up programs and keep them on the shelf.
So
and then,
where the studio became, that's where we would do this on off air stuff. They switched it. You in the booth you see in the footage, that's where you would do your off air recordings. But where the studio became the bigger place, that's where we would do our recordings, you know, prepare our shows.
Oh, I see.
They switched them.
Right, okay. Yeah, it was, anyway, but so CAU, so this is what happened with this.
Here's an interesting point to bring it back to me. So you talk about the university and its respect. Guess who's on the board of the university, therefore in charge of this situation? Nelson Thal's father. He comes back to international connection once again. Thal's father.
Where?
He's on the board, longtime fundraiser for the University of Toronto.
Yeah, it's possible.
It's like if you're saying the university took over, that's the prestige of the board and the whole higher levels of it.
Right.
But there's some underling that does the work or whatever they did, but that's Mr. Thal.
Yeah. I've got all
the Toronto Star.
It's fascinating reading the things that CIUT put forward to try to convince the CRTC to keep the station going. It seemed like it was really nip and tuck back there in 2000, and they but they allowed them to do it, but based only on the fact that the university would
be
responsible.
Mr. Thal was in charge. As long as Mr. Thal was in charge, who was a very respected businessman and whatever, the whole thing. Like, the guy, Mr. Thal would bring in the presidents of the university. They'd have to be often the presidents of the university would end up on the board of Torstar, like John somebody, who.
Honderich or something.
Oh, no, that's one of the families. No, that's the family. There were five families. The guy, John Evans, who tries to become mayor or lives up in Forest Hill, he's supported by Trudeau. John Evans was, or John Pritchard, there's Pritchard and Evans, these names.
Oh, Pritchard, yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is about, I remember you doing, I listened to your report, and you were interviewing the two factions at the CIUT, I think.
I'll give you some background. You might have forgotten why we did those programs. At one point, going back a few years from that point, we were doing a show, Daniel and I, one morning, and somebody phones in, this woman phones in, and, I don't know, we're talking, and somehow in the conversation, it comes up that she's a programmer at CIUT. So I go, really? I said, I've got to ask you a few questions about this, because I'm curious about how things work over there. So I start asking questions about the inner workings of CIUT.
Yeah.
And comparing them to how things are at CKLN. For instance, I said, it seems like it's really easy to lose your show over at CIUT. Whereas I said, here, it's almost impossible to lose your show. Very ironic statement of mine, right? Given as to what would happen later.
Yeah.
So we get into a conversation with her. And I don't think I thought it was terribly controversial what we were doing, nor did I think anyone would hear it. Anyway, the next week, we get a call or something from the program director of CKLN. He says, I got a call from CAUT, the station manager or whatever of CAUT. And he says, We have an agreement. We don't talk about one another.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I go. I said, well, how were we to know that? And he says, so don't talk about, don't talk about them. And I mean, I got in, didn't get into an argument with him about it or anything, but I thought, I said, well, what other restrictions are there? Well, what else can't we talk about on the air, right? Can we not talk about the CBC or what can't we talk about? And he says, well, they don't like it. And I go, and I sort of said, well, I don't care really what they like or what they don't like, but okay. So anyway, you know, I mean, I don't understand why that's out of bounds. And furthermore, someone from their end brought it up. I didn't bring it up, but you know, I'm curious about how things work. And anyway, so that kind of went away, and but those people who ran CIUT, they had a vendetta out for us after that.
You,
they never forgot.
You and Daniel.
Yeah, yeah, they never forgot that we had dared to talk about CIUT. It's just how petty it is, right? Now,
yeah,
mind you, this guy who's running the place is at the very time that we're talking about what goes on at CIUT, he evidently, allegedly, was, according to a lawsuit filed by CIUT against this man, he's defrauding the place.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So,
And the CKLN guys seem to know.
Well,
they didn't themselves talked about by either station.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember one time, the program director came to us and said, "Hey, don't talk about me on the air. I'm trying to keep a low profile." And we go, "Okay, you know, because but then again, he would appear on the air and using his own name,
yeah.
Evidently, if that really was his name." But you know, there were strange things.
They didn't want you talking because you were uncontrollable.
Yeah,
you didn't know the stakes.
I guess so. And so then I'm trying to remember exactly what happened here, but we got into so we're at CKLN and we're down in the basement there in those studios like you saw in the video, as you are most familiar with,
yeah.
Bob, from being there. And then we were told over many years, almost from the moment I got there in 2000, that we were going to go to Valhalla. You know, we're going to move into this great new place where all of the problems that we had, all these technical problems, all this primitive equipment we were working with that was always failing, we'd move into the promised land. And the reason, and of course, the further it got along to, you know, the years it took to get there,
yeah.
The equipment got more and more decrepit because they sort of said, well, we don't want to bother fixing it because, you know, we're going to be moving into Valhalla, you know. So they go, well, we've got to suffer along here for a while because it's going to be counterproductive to fix all this rotten equipment we've got because we're going to get all new stuff over there and it's going to be great. So, and they'd have meetings about it, and we're going, and Daniel and I are thinking, well, you know, it can't be any worse than what we have here. And even then, Daniel and I had, by bringing in wiring and doing fixes and stuff on our own every week, we kind of got the place to work properly for us.
Yeah.
When we'd come in, for instance, we'd come in and we'd reset the entire board, all of the parameters of the board, and we did tests.
Yeah.
You know, in the weeks prior to that, we'd do technical tests over the air. Danny would examine them, like off air, like back here at headquarters, and we would figure out how far off the technical quality was, and then we'd go in and reset all of the things to get it so that it would actually be proper, and then when we would finish the show every week, we'd put it all back to the horrible the way that it had been given to us.
I remember that. I remember you describing the details of all that.
Yeah, Danny, like, for instance, we'd start a program off, and Danny would go, I got to do a few tests. I'd go, okay. And he'd be playing tones and all kinds of weird noises and things like that. And then he'd go, that'd go on for about 2 minutes, and then he'd go, okay, I'm done. And then we'd get on with the program. And then we'd come back to headquarters, we'd have a recording of that, and he'd start saying, okay, it's off so many degrees this way, so many degrees that way. You know, we'd do it, and we'd do it another week, and he'd go, oh, that wasn't quite right. Okay, we'll push it a little bit further here, a little bit further there. And then he says, okay, we've got it now. We've got it. So everything's perfect on our program. On our program, it's working. He says, but everybody else's will still sound like crap.
So you had the best sounding program, but no one was listening.
Yeah, we did. The thing is, we had things in proper stereo. We had, like, our voices would be in the middle, Like, we had proper stereo on either side and everything. Everybody else's show, they're all over, going over into the corners of the speaker, and, there'd be no sound on one side. We'd listen to it, and go, can't believe how bad this is. And then, but of course, our show would sound really good.
Yeah.
Because Danny had worked out how to get it so that it was, reasonable.
My memory is that your show.
Let me ask.
Hey, Carol, just say this.
No, Greg, my show. Greg. Did anyone notice that your show was better? Did anyone notice?
No, I don't think so. But then again, but Danny said to me, he says, when people tune in to listen to the program, but do they want to hear us, if they got a stereo system, do they want to hear us way over in the corner of the room? And nothing coming out of one speaker and all kinds of weird noises happening all over the place. It ruins the listener experience.
Yeah.
So he just said, because if things are working okay, people don't notice it. It's when things aren't right that people notice it.
And my memory is it was always, I don't remember any problems, but that's all I knew about the station was when I get on with you guys, I didn't know how the other shows were because I didn't listen to it. But your station, your always was perfect resonance. I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, it took a while to get to that point. Sometimes we'd be on the air and I'd go, and I'd hear something like going, and I go, Danny, what the hell is that? And when we'd stop talking completely, and you'd hear whoop, 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 and there'd be something going on underneath what we were doing all the time, these weird noises and things like that. And it was just...
That was in the wires.
Yeah, it just everything was bad about it, and no one seemed to care. Nobody seemed to... They knew about it. You'd go, there's this weird, you go to the engineer, you go, there's this weird noise there. And they go, oh, yeah, that's some kind of something, and we don't know how to fix that.
Well,
didn't seem to bother anybody.
Because the reason to be on CKLN was for community activities out there that would be reasonably profitable. Wasn't that the reason to be on the station?
I guess so. But nobody seemed to, I don't know, nobody seemed to care that everything sounded so bad.
Right.
And it's, anyway, so we're back.
Now you're going to go move into the new place.
Okay, we move into the new place. And within, I don't know, 3 weeks, I'm saying to Danny, I'm having a meeting with him after the show. I said, look, I'm going away for a couple of weeks, going on a holiday. I said, can you, but by the time I get back, do you think you could arrange to get us off that station and on somewhere else?
What?
I said, yeah. I said to him, I said, do you think, I said, I can't do anything over the next couple of weeks, but can you work out a plan how we can just get out of here? Because this is just so annoying. It's so annoying. We put so much work and effort into the program. We get in there and we just can't get it out there. It's even worse than it was. And furthermore, I didn't think it was going to be getting any better. That was the thing. It wasn't like, oh, okay, this is growing pains. We're new here, and it's going to work. They'll work out the kinks. I just thought that every week was a new problem. And you'd fix one thing, and then 10 new things would crop up. And I just got so frustrated. And so I think I got back from holiday, and, Danny didn't quite, I was tall order, get us on some other place. And we even talked about renting another studio to do the show and having it fed in to CKLN. But then Danny says, you know they'd screw that up, right?
Yeah.
I go, yeah. So then I said, well, why don't we talk? I mean, we do the show for nothing. We don't get paid. But we know we make, you know, we make a fair amount of money for the station every year in the fundraising.
Yeah.
Because it was a popular program, given that we were on at, you know, 8:30 on a Sunday morning when nobody's listening. Everybody's hungover or something. So I said, why don't we, I know we've had problems with CIUT before, but, you know, business is business. And, you know, we're not going to be paid or anything, but we actually bring money in. We've got a popular show. So I said, why don't we get in touch with CIUT and just see whether, you know, they might be interested in having our show over there. Because their station didn't sound quite so bad as CKLN. Mm. You know, just an exploratory thing. So I get in touch with somebody there, one of these two jokers that's over at this place, one of whom is still there. And I said, I'd like to have a conversation with you that is confidential. And the guy goes, I don't know whether I can do this. I said, well, I said, I think it's a fairly simple request. I said, I want to have a conversation with you where what we're talking about doesn't go beyond you and I. That's what it means, confidential. He said, well, I don't know whether I can. Yeah. And I go, what's the problem? You know? And he goes, and he starts rambling on about something. And I said, look, I said, I'm not going to admit to a murder. I said, so he goes, well, okay, all right. And it's all very, I don't know, he's not really committing.
Yeah.
So, but I get to the point, where he sounded like he committed that it would be confidential, but took a long time to get there. So then I said, okay, look, I said, this is it. We kind of unhappy over at CKLN. We'd like to try and see whether we could do the show somewhere else. And, you know, we think we have something to offer in terms of content and also, you know, we do fairly well over at fundraising and, we're just looking for a better technical environment to do the program. We're just wondering whether you might have, whether that's a possibility, whether you would consider that. And he goes, well, maybe, I don't know. I said, I understand you just can't agree to something or write or disagree with it right now. I said, I'm asking you to give it some thought. When could I hear back from you about it? Well, you know, maybe Tuesday or something. Now, I'm recording this call, okay?
Yeah.
Not this call we're having now,
yeah.
But you're recording it.
Yeah.
But I was recording the call. At that time, we were recording every single phone call we were doing. And so I had a recording of it. And I think there were a couple of calls that we made to CIUT. One was the program director. He said, oh, you'll have to speak to the station manager. I go, okay. So that was how that went. So that last conversation I was talking about, I think, was with the station manager, the guy who was eventually sued by CIUT for some malfeasance.
Right.
And so we, anyway.
You waited to hear from him.
Yeah, I'm waiting to hear from the guy. Then we get a call from the program director of CKLN, who is now telling me about my entire conversation with this guy.
Hey, Carolyn, unmute your phone. Let's hear Carolyn laugh.
Yeah. Well, I was livid, you know. And because basically what the guy was trying to do was to get us fired from CKLN.
On that basis?
Well, on the basis that we were phoning up and saying,
yeah,
we want to go over to CAUT. And he just immediately phoned the program director, the same guy that he had a deal with that nobody talks about one another, right?
Right, yeah.
So, anyway, we're hearing about this. And the program director at CKLN, I mean, I guess he was a pretty good guy about it. And I told him, I told him straight out. I said, look, you know, we're having trouble doing the show at the station because the technical quality is just so bad that, you know, it ruins all the work we put into it. We work like 40 hours a week on the damn thing, and we go in to do the 2 hours, and we just can't even get through it. So I said, so that's why I wanted to go somewhere else, because I figured they may have a better technical setup there, you know. And so I was just honest with him. And I said, and I asked that guy to keep it confidential, and he's violated that completely. Obviously, because I wouldn't be talking to you about this. I said, I didn't want to get you involved in this. I just phoned him up, asked him, I said, I figure I'm not a slave to CKLM. You know, yeah. I can go somewhere else if I want. I'm not under contract or anything. I said, I just figured business is business. So, anyway, so I'm incensed about this bastard over at CAUT. You know, violating, you know, confidence. And so I thought, I immediately started, I said, Danny, it was on a Wednesday or something. I said, Danny, on Sunday, we're doing a show about CIUT.
You're going to investigate them.
Yeah, we're going to do a whole thing about CIUT. So I start doing a lot of research really quickly. I'm very motivated at this point to do this. And I'm talking to people very quickly because I want to do it right there and then. I don't want to wait for 3 weeks. I want to do it now. So we go on and then CKLN gets wind that we're going to do an entire program about CIUT. And they get all, like, they get nervous, but I was sort of half-heartedly nervous. They were worried that we were going to go on and do something. And I said, look, I said to the you know, it was Mike Phillips, I don't know whether he was, I don't know what position he had there at that point, whether he was a station manager or not. But I said, look, Mike, I said, you've got a kill switch, like a dump button. I said, if you're so worried about what we're going to do, and I said, I'm telling you, I'm not going to do anything that's actionable. I have no intention of doing that, either for myself, be actionable against me, or the station. I said, I'm just going to be talking about facts and people's opinions and things like that. I said, but if you're so nervous about it, why don't you come down on Sunday morning, and you can sit by the dump button, and if you hear anything you don't like, just hit the button.
Yeah.
You know, and you chop out so many seconds or whatever, chalk out certain words or something, and if you just think that, you know, we're going way beyond the pale, you know, you can come in and say, look, stop it or whatever, right? I said, anyway, they actually allowed us to do it without any dump button stuff. And maybe because I told them, look, come down and use the dump button, maybe he thought, oh, they're probably not going to do anything.
Right.
So we had enough material on CIUT to do, I think, almost 3 2-hour programs. 3 weeks of going at CKLN or CIUT.
And you did that. And you organized that for the first show, or that's 3 weeks of research?
No. I did a few days of research. We did show one. That we had so much material that we were able to do another 2 shows, as I recall, about it. It was kind of relentless. And Danny put these web pages together, and we were going after this guy, you know, this guy who later got sued by CIUT.
The guy who violated you.
Yeah. And,
well, how did you do it without being actionable?
I don't know. We just, well, I didn't think anything we were doing. We were talking about facts.
So you would interview people. And they
we interviewed people, and we talked about, I got their opinions on things and stuff like that. I mean, it'd be interesting to listen to the shows again, I suppose, but but then we did things, like we got a picture of the station manager over at CIUT, and we did things on the website with his picture. I can't remember what it was that we did, but Danny did a lot of Photoshop, and
yeah,
it was I was kind of amazing that there wasn't, it wasn't worse. But we knew that they were listening too. They were very interested in listening.
Yeah.
We knew, we had a sort of an insight, technical insight, that they were coming and listening to our programs and very interested in what we were doing. But nothing ever happened, really. But they really hated us.
Because,
and if they didn't,
yeah,
if they didn't hate us before, they hated us before, but now they really hated us. And
would you hear something about that?
And the other thing was, these some of these hangers-on, like at CKLN, were complaining about us to the management and in meetings, saying, you know, they've ruined our business opportunity. Really, they said we had some, you know, festival of reggae music we were going to do that was co-sponsored with CIUT, and CIUT pulled out because of them. Them, you know, they did this thing, you know, and it was like they were trying to I guess these people who really became our enemies there, or were already our enemies, they were trying to get rid of us because, on the basis that we'd ruined this cozy business relationship that they had with these events that they somehow made money from and so on.
Right.
And that was
the only effect of the show. You never heard, I mean, I heard those shows, but nobody said much to you after the shows, right? There was no feedback other than that.
I don't really remember that CKLN. It was almost like CKLN was. It was almost like Mike Phillips was kind of happy that we were doing things against CIUT, because actually, I think at the time, the guy who was the engineer, Mike Phillips was the engineer at CKLN. I think he actually did engineering work freelance over at CIUT. So he was working for both of them, making money from both of them.
Yeah.
But I think he had a little, maybe he had a grudge. I can't say that for sure. But he didn't exactly mind that we were doing it, I don't think. He was just initially concerned that maybe we're going to go absolutely berserk, you know, and do things that were counterproductive to CKLN in terms of legally, which we were, I mean, I don't know what that would have been, but I knew that we weren't wanting to do that.
Yeah, and you got away with it. Whatever you did, nobody could complain.
Yeah, I mean, we just basically what we did was we did a history of what had occurred in 2000 at CIUT.
Yeah.
That was the premise of the what we were doing. But in the course, but actually, here's the other thing. When part of those shows, I admitted to the audience, I admitted to the audience that we had wanted to leave CKLN. I admitted it.
Yeah.
Right? And I took the recordings that we'd made of the conversations that we'd had in explaining why we were doing what we were doing. I took the recordings, and I knew I couldn't play them on the air. But what I said was that how I explained it to the audience, I said, I have an extremely good memory. And I remember everything I say in telephone conversations and what other people say in telephone conversations. You know, almost verbatim. I said, I remember almost exactly. It's one of the great skills that I have. One of the few skills I have is I've got a fantastic memory for what is said in a conversation and what other people say. And I said, and what we're going to do right now is between Daniel and me, we're going to do a reenactment of the phone conversation that occurred to the best of our abilities with the program director of CIUT and the station manager of CIUT. But of course I had a full transcript of both phone calls written out.
Right.
So Daniel took one, he took the management side, right, of the, he
so you were
reenacted.
Pretending it was based in your memory, but it was based on actual recordings.
Yeah, it was based on actual. Yeah. I had actual recordings. I had a full transcript of everything. I'd written everything out from a transcript of a telephone conversation I'd had. So,
time on your hands.
I had a full script, and we reenacted the entire telephone conversation. On
why
air.
Wouldn't you play the tapes? What was the reason?
It would be illegal to do that.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't illegal for me to in Ontario. It's not illegal for me to record a conversation and keep it for my records. What would be illegal is for me to, and I know you, I'm sure the statute of limitations is over, Bob, but you've actually violated this on the air once, but...
on your show?
No, you did it on your show. Maybe several times, but I know at least one thing that you played where you didn't have the permission
we know
of the
about
other
that.
Party.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
the Hollywood person.
But,
the Hollywood person.
Yeah. So, but in our case, if I have permission to have that recording, however, I can't play the recording over the air because I don't have the permission of the other party.
Yeah.
So, but I thought, not being a lawyer or anything, that I had the right to reenact it. So, so Daniel played the part of either the station manager of CIUT or the program director, and I played myself. And we did the entire call as it had occurred. And we, so for, you know, maybe half an hour or so, we described why we did what we did, what the situation was, why we thought they were scumbags, and why we were going to do this whole this whole recapitulation of what happened at CIUT, whole examination of what the hell was going on over there.
Do you think that what you did got the university people investigating the guy?
Well, I never thought that, but it was, we sort of portrayed this guy as a bit of a crook.
Yeah.
And within a few years, well, I can't remember how many years, but it all came true, you know, he was booted out of there, then there was a lawsuit, and I don't know what happened with that. It probably never went anywhere. But, you know, money was gone from the place. He somehow, it sounded like, from what I read in the claim, that there'd been some embezzlement of funds and so on, and it probably sounded like a lot of money. But... He was sneaky, you know. I mean, he was sneaky with us, and why wouldn't he be sneaky with other people?
Yeah.
And I remember they also had a thing where there was a time when CIUT, it's kind of weird what they did. The CBC went on strike, and the morning show that the CBC had was hosted by a guy named Andy Berry.
Oh, I remember.
And we used to make fun of him on our program. Danny liked to make fun of him.
He interviewed
for some
Carolyn
reason.
Once.
Hmm?
He interviewed Carolyn once or twice.
Did he?
Yeah.
So, anyway, the CBC was on strike, and it went on for quite a few weeks. And the station manager of CIUT offered to allow these people who were on strike at the CBC to come over to CIUT and do their morning show at CIUT. And, you know, Danny and I were talking about this, and I think there was something wrong about that. I mean, really wrong, that it should not have occurred, almost legally wrong.
Yeah.
Certainly with the mandate of CIUT and to sort of turn them into the public broadcaster, it was... very strange situation and questionable. But anyway, they made a big deal of it, and they had an open house or a gathering or something. And so Danny and I went to it, and we confronted confronted this the station manager there. I did. I confronted him personally.
Is this 2 years after the 3 week show you did?
Yes, after we had done that, I went down and I confronted him personally.
About confidential stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
were you bigger than him?
Yeah.
So you could, did you know that?
He's a little weasel, you know.
Yeah.
And actually, that's how we portrayed him. We said he was a weasel. So I said, we were thinking what kinds of Photoshop things we could do, right?
Yeah.
Because Danny could put that together pretty quickly. I said, oh, and maybe, Bob, you won't know about this, but maybe your listeners might. There's a character in the cartoons. You know Foghorn Leghorn? You know the loudmouthed rooster?
Yeah.
Well, in some of the cartoons, there's this weasel, this bug-eyed weasel that comes in. It's really kind of hungry and slobbering, and it just, like, it just will go for your leg, right? Foghorn Leghorn's leg, and start chewing on it. And it's just spinning around, and it's, you know, it's kind of like a Tasmanian devil type of character. Anyway, so I said, oh, let's make this guy into the weasel, because we've called him a weasel.
Yeah.
And so we did. We put his face onto that weasel character. We did all kinds of things. I mean it was pretty brutal against this guy.
Yeah.
And on the website. And
so then you go and confront him.
I did, yeah. I can't remember too much about it. I mean, I think he ran away. I think he just when he realized it was me, he got out of there, and was probably going to be, you know, going and calling the University of Toronto security or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the only time that I actually saw this guy. I've never met the program director. I know people. He's now the station manager.
So the station still goes?
Still goes with basically the same people. The people that they put in 2000, the people that the university put in place, still run the station. It's all very Liberal Party, too. Liberal Party of Canada or Liberal Party of Ontario, whatever. I know it's all affiliated with that.
Right, so Stick Allen used to be NDP, and CIT was Liberal.
Yes, yes.
So what kind of programming do they have? Do people have...
I don't know.
You never listen to it.
No, I don't. It's pretty dull.
Yeah.
It's pretty dull. I mean, it's... I haven't listened to it in ages. But I know that the program director, the ex-program director, who's now the station manager, he's often on the air. Doing shows. I mean, why he is and why he can't find somebody else to do it, I have no idea. But he did a lot of what they call world music. You know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
He's into that, and he's probably, you know, he's a white liberal who thinks by doing that it makes him seem like he's a man of the world or something.
Right.
So egalitarian. Musical egalitarian, it's very very conservative type programming. Nothing very odd. They have one show on there by a guy named Phil Taylor, and he's sort of a friend. Sometimes Norman Otis Richmond appears on that program.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of, you know, it's kind of a left wing program, I guess you'd say. And
right.
he seems to be allowed to do stuff. He's the only person there that's allowed to do anything slightly political. Everybody, there's nothing else political. Although what this guy does is he brings on people to host shows who are actual politicians. He gives actual politicians their own programs, which I think is terrible.
Yeah.
So,
because it's supposed to be community.
Yeah, and he runs at Amy Goodman. Do you know who she is?
Oh, yeah. I know Amy.
Democracy Now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
horrible
that,
boys. Imagine listening to that every day. Jeez.
That was terrible. And so they run that. In lieu of having anybody locally come in and do a show, right? Wow. They just pick this stuff, syndicated stuff up from America, and run it on there. They probably don't pay anything for it, and it fills up their spoken word component of their license, if that even plays into it anymore. And they don't have the bother of having ideas being put out there that might give the management some trouble, right?
Yeah.
So it's all very safe because they can say, oh, well, you know, those are the views of Amy Goodman. Oh, okay. well, that's okay then, right? Whereas if it was some schlub doing a volunteer doing some political show and saying something that somebody didn't like, it'd be a federal case. So it's all, you know, very cowardly radio programming.
Right. Hey, do you know the name Ken Stowar? Stowar?
I think that's the guy I was just talking about.
I know. I knew it. I went to a friend in Toronto's Facebook page. I was looking at these pictures earlier today. This is where my life goes. What I do in the morning will be reflected later at night through Xenocrony or something. And the other name is Daniel Barnes. Does that mean anything?
No, that name doesn't mean nothing
Ken
to me.
Ken Stowar, let's see, it's they're holding up a T-shirt, the 30th anniversary of
CIUT.
Of CIUT, so it started in 88.
Yeah, I have no idea what this guy even looks like. If I saw him on the street, I would never know him. I've never seen a picture of him.
You just know the name.
Yeah, his pronunciation evidently is Stower.
Oh, okay.
Ken Stower. So he would have been the first guy, like in the story I was telling you about. He was the first guy I spoke to. I can't remember whether he was the one. I think he was the one that was saying that he couldn't have it confidential.
But he's not the one you made fun of.
No, we never went after Stower because we weren't quite sure what his role was. We knew what kind of conversation we had with him at first. He was our first point of contact, but we knew, he says, oh, you'll have to speak to, you know, the station manager, right? And he's got, you know, sort of radio voice.
No, he survived. I'm looking at his site. He is presently station manager / program director at CIUT.
Right. So this is the other interesting
thing. Over from the weasel guy.
Right. He immediately took over and took over both roles, so there was no need, evidently, to have...
That's right, he's got both roles here.
Yeah, there was no need all those years for there to be two salaries. This guy seems to be able to, A, not only be the station manager, B, be the program director, and C, he seems to be able to spend a lot of time on the air. So it mustn't be that hard to do. But they had another guy there who was a political appointee who was there ripping off the place, evidently, allegedly. So...
So it says here, he's former operations manager and head buyer at Sunrise Records. Does that mean anything to you?
I didn't know that. Yeah. Well, do I know? Well, Sunrise Records was I don't know whether it's totally defunct. I think it is, but it used to have, you know, on Record Row there on Yonge Street, where there was Sam the Record Man and A&A Records and later HMV Records was there, which is now shut down completely.
Record Peddler,
I can't remember, was that on Yonge Street down there?
No, I think that was opposite the garden.
Yeah, that was somewhere else. But anyway, Sunrise Records was in the sort of Record Row there up until maybe 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago,
right.
And then they all started disappearing one by one until there really isn't any, there aren't any left. They're all gone. HMV.
Is it all boarded up on Yonge Street?
Well, the Sunrise Records was a fairly small store.
No, I mean in general. You say they're all gone. What replaced?
Well, yes. Well, the HMV was a very, very big store.
Yeah, I know that.
It was three stories of videos and records and all of that. And I went by there today. It has been shut down for at least, I'm guessing, 2 years, a year to 2 years. The building is still, it's a very big building on Yonge Street, right downtown. It's empty.
I know. That's the building that Bob's Meteorology was in the window of in April, May, 92.
There you go.
The album's in there. Okay, so the other day, I came across something called Across the Universe, and there was a lot of raves about it. What a great show. So I set it aside to listen to see what kind of music their DJs do. But I didn't get to it. But here it is. Ken manages Across the Universe. So I'm in my tunnel again. You've walked me right into what I was looking at 2 days ago, Greg.
Why? How did you ever hear about this program?
I don't know. Somebody told me about it, or I was looking at it, Across the Universe.
I can almost guarantee it'll be incredibly dull. If he has something to do with it, it's going to be dull.
All right. Well, it says here on his site, yesterday at 6:13 a.m., up right now with Funky Fridays on CAUT, beginning with tracks by the Menahan Street Band, Budo's Band, B-U-D-O-S, Lee Fields, and Al Green, plus a whole lot more.
Yeah, well, I'll admit that I actually used to record Funky Fridays because I'm into funk music.
Yeah.
But even that, I mean, you know, you know what? I think Stoward started to even do Funky Friday.
Right, he's doing everything.
It seems like he was frightened to actually bring anybody in to do things. and he just felt, oh, I'll just do it myself. Oh, you know, like station manager's been taken out because of alleged embezzlement. Oh, I'll just come in and do his job. No problem. Oh, somebody isn't doing their... Someone has left their show, isn't coming in. Oh, I'll just go in and do that. No need to. It's a community station, I know. But no need to get anybody to come in and do it. I think I can handle it.
Well, they've got here pictures of them with, you know, see if you know these names. Ken Stower with Jay Cleary, C-L-E-A-R-Y. It says two giants of Toronto's underground music scene, Ken Stower and Jay Cleary.
Why would anybody, fewer and fewer people are going to be listening to stations like that.
Yeah.
Because if you like a certain type of thing, you're going to go to an internet station that does that all the time.
Yeah.
Or you're going to go on YouTube or something. You're going to get to what you want to hear. Most people aren't going to be going to a radio station and going, hey, I'm just going to take whatever they're going to throw at me. I mean, if you were to do that at CAUT at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you've got an hour of Punjabi radio. I mean, people are going to be leaving in droves, right?
Yeah, yeah.
At one time, I think that stations like CKLN and CAUT, there was a market for that. People would just turn it on.
Yeah, before 95, before the internet.
It was eclectic. If you liked eclectic stuff and you liked weird things going on half the time, you know, you'd go there and you'd just listen to that and it would satisfy you. And because you wouldn't really be thinking you'd be missing out on anything else because you couldn't get anything else.
Right.
You'd either be, I mean, if you wanted to listen to a top 40 station, I'm sure you'd be there and the thing would be locked on. If you liked eclectic things or liked things a little bit different, you would go and listen to a station like that. But those days are over.
Yep.
I think only a very few people would be going to that for their major listening now. I think that they'd be scouring the internet.
It's just for people that used to listen to it for decades.
People who have radios, right? Who still use radios.
Okay, he's in the picture with Elios Stereanis.
I don't know who any. Yeah, I we used to follow what was going on over there.
Yeah.
Because we'd be making fun of it, we just want to know what was happening over there, and we would record certain programs just to monitor what was happening.
Yeah.
And we don't do any of that anymore. I mean, there's no need.
That's right.
For our purposes. I mean, they did have weird... I remember once we did... I'll tell you the other one. It wasn't just that woman phoning in and where we talked about CIUT. One time, there was a show we were actually following that was still a little bit interesting. And it just disappeared one day. And we got in touch with the guy, and we said, would you come on our program and talk about your experience doing a show at CIUT? So he did. He came on, and we hadn't, you know, it was a really, I thought it was an interesting show, but that really got them angry.
Mm.
When we had a guy who they basically fired.
Right.
Or, and had him on sort of describing, you know, what went on. He was sort of bitter about it. You know, so
yep.
That made it even better. And that got them really angry.
I get that. Now, I wonder if the woman who called you up was Lydia Washuk.
No.
You know that
no,
name?
No. No. The person who called in, I have a guy who does cat sitting for me. When I go away, he's really good, comes and stays at the house, takes care of the cats. He's just great. And he used to be a programmer at CKLN.
Okay.
And he also cat sits, turns out, for the woman who phoned into the show. And so he's told me, and I said, and I've never met this woman ever, except talking to her when we did the show over the air. And I said, what does she think of us? And she says, oh, she hates you. She just hates you. And I go, really? What do we ever do to her? But she's sort of some, I think she's wealthy in some way,
yeah.
Independently wealthy with her husband, and they go traveling around for months, and he goes, stays at their house and takes care of their cats and gives them injections and all kinds of things. And in some form or another, as I recall, she's just independently wealthy. But I won't give her name.
Right. I'm looking at Ken with different people as part of the CIUT party.
Yeah, I don't think anybody hangs around there too long. But here's the interesting thing, though. When, you know, I described how this other group of people took over CKLN,
yep.
And when we went back?
Yeah.
What some of these people who had influence there, they'd always go, you know what, if things don't work out here, we'll just go over to CIUT.
Yeah.
And I'd say to them, how are you able to manage that? How are you able just to, you know, just feel like you can go over there and get a show? They never really explain why.
Mm.
But when it actually happened, when CKLN was finished, both of these guys, as I recall, who were friends, got shows at CIUT.
Wow.
No, Ken Stauer would just open up a block of time and bingo, they were in there. So I don't know what special attributes they had. And these were, I wouldn't say these were people who, in one case, I wouldn't say someone who's really good on the air in any, I think he mumbled and.
Yeah.
The guy would go on and he'd mumble and he'd be tearing off, like he'd be, when he'd be talking about a record or a CD, you could hear him ripping the cellophane off the CD, and he'd hear all this crinkling, and he didn't have any, he seemed not to have any sense of the audience being there, hearing all these untoward sounds going on that weren't part of, part of a gag or anything, you know,
right.
or part of the show. He'd just be and mumbling, and you couldn't make out what he was saying half the time. And like, not a really good radio presence, but, you know, old Ken Stauer, who is, you know, got the radio voice and so on, he just plugged him right in there. I think that guy is still doing a weekly program there. Of the kind of music that you maybe, I mean, sort of the kind of music that you play.
Right.
You know, before your program.
Yeah.
He's into that.
He's into all kinds of variety.
Yeah.
The whole range.
There's a quite similar to the kind of things that you might pick, you know, to run. And does sort of a show like that. But, yeah, so it was interesting how these people who were a lot of, actually, when I think about it, a lot of the people that were, one of the women that was, the woman who was the chair of the board that was in there had been at CIUT.
Yeah.
So they had, they seem to have associations with them.
Right.
It's all very cliquey, you know, the whole, this
okay.
whole thing, as
yep.
things usually are, I guess.
You're reminding me of it all. I remember that.
Yeah.
I even know who you mean, the board woman.
Yeah, right.
About.
You met her. Yeah, you
yeah,
met,
I met her.
I don't know. I
ran,
don't know how she's
I,
doing.
I ran and I proposed myself to be international rep to her.
That's right. You had to make a presentation to her,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then we recorded and you played it.
That's right. That's right. Did we do that over the air?
Yeah, we played it over the air.
Oh.
That's October 2007, pretty sure.
Wow, that's a long time ago now.
But just to place it, are you get knocked off in 2006, right? And get back in
we,
the fall
we,
of 2007.
Yeah, we got, we were, yeah, we were, yeah.
yeah.
We're marked, we're, I think it was October 2006, and then we got back on the air late 2007.
Right.
And then it all ended about, you know, maybe
February,
14
March
months,
2009.
About 14 months later.
Yeah, when Dave was here. February, he closed
right.
it down again. February
right.
2009. And then,
yeah.
then the February 28th, it was nothing on or something. And then it limped along for another year.
Wasn't our last show the 22nd of...
Yeah,
yeah.
Last show was the 22nd of 2009. and, you know, that's 3 weeks before Ion showed up. See, we put. I'm
really?
Going to put that into the mythology. We closed down CKLN, and then Ion came forth.
Amazing.
Yeah, no, that I hadn't put that there. Well, maybe back then, but now I got it in my head. Yeah, and Neufeld
well,
had to be
part wonderful.
Of it. And now here I am. 11 years later, reminding everybody of the war wound. Dave Bernard versus Dave Neufeld, right there on the. On the class reunion.
And they won't allow you to do it.
Yeah, they won't let me say it.
How did you find that out?
Arella, when she posted the thing that I gave her, the John Cage. See, I was with her on the phone. She and I interviewed John Cage. And I got a
right.
document from John Cage. He sent me something, a McLuhan document, a rare thing he had. So either by her posting and saying my name, I get noticed automatically, or she emailed me. I don't remember which, but that was earlier yesterday. And then I started reading it, and I said, oh, let me show these guys. Bob Zanocrony. Here's Mike Dyer's in the article, and that's the day that we started the famous Bob Show, June 17th, 1987. It was allowed to be up there for 5 minutes. Bye. No history, Bob. You're not part of our history.
Well, that's what they do. They just censor
yeah.
everything. The history. History has to be rearranged
I don't know Andy
for their benefit.
Andy Sokansky is a guy that Mike Dyer told me about. Maybe he was in the station in 85, 86 at one point. One time I saw him. I recognize him now. But he went to L.A. You know, he's been there a long time. And I don't know the guy, but If he's working on Dave Bernard information, he wouldn't have a very good image of me.
So many weasels. So many.
I don't know. I could say, well, it's the nature of people with no money.
I guess so.
Scrounging who don't want to work. A lot
but
of
Bernard stuff. Always struck me as someone who had money.
I don't know about that.
Well, I think he was well-to-do or had... Had a way of he made sure that he had access to funds and access to money.
Well, my last conversation with him was mid-90s. He was doing something for CBC in some booth, and I bumped in and we get talking. And he says, "Sorry to hear you and Carolyn got divorced." I said, "What?" He said, "Yep." That's what the word is. So they were smearing me back then that Carolyn left me 25 years ago.
I think he just lives in a world where he wishes things would happen.
Yeah.
And then he just pushes his wishes on the actual people. You know what he said to me? He said to me, like, this is a little sneak. He says, we're protesting CKLN. I can't remember what was happening, but... He was hanging around where we were, and he says to me, "Oh, you should go and do what you're, you know, just stick to what you're good at."
And he says but, it like that. You're imitating his voice pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. You should just stick to what you're good at.
What are you good at? Animation.
What he was saying is, but this is what Bernard was doing. It was a double-edged sword,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He's saying, I know what you do for a living. And
yes.
I can, you know, I have connections. And I can make your life a living hell in your business. I can take your business. Why don't you just go off and do what you do in your business? And just stay out of this radio thing that you don't do very well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm good at radio, you know, but you're not.
What was amazing is you guys would be number two or three in the fundraising every year. That was
really, we were. I think there's only one person that beat us.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Was Benson?
Oh
Dave
yeah, didn't
Benson?
Yeah, didn't they kind
maybe.
Of? They you caught them playing with the figures.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. We did, and really, we were number one. We were number
well,
one.
Well, that's amazing.
If you took it all out, basically, what they did was, for instance, Ron Nelson.
Yeah.
We found out what they did with him. He started out as the hip hop guy, right?
Yeah, 1984.
Yeah, and then I guess he decided that there was more money in reggae dancehall, and made the move out of the or maybe he's getting his life threatened. Who knows? In the hip hop thing, it got too dangerous. So he switched out and did some other type of program and made a lot of money out of it, I suppose. And what was I saying about Nelson?
Bernard?
I can't remember where I was going with that, with him. What were you saying earlier, Bob? Sorry. It's getting late in the. It's getting early in the morning.
Yeah, we should go out with a whimper.
We should. Yeah.
We should have us just try to have brain fog here and then sort of go to music. Why are we on the air? Who are we talking about? I said we were talking about Bernard, and then I discovered something, and then you remembered that and the money. Yeah, they were rigging his.
Okay. What would happen was, when we first started doing the fundraising, which would happen in the fall every year, we'd come in on Sunday morning, and they'd say, "Okay, you know, International Connection has a quota to do. We want $300 or $400 or whatever out of your show." And we go, "Okay." But we'd come in, and everybody'd be saying, Ron Nelson did $23,000 on Friday night, or something, some huge amount of money, right? And everybody felt belittled or beholden somehow to Ron Nelson, who we never, ever saw at the station. Outside of the time he did his program, and if you weren't there during that, you never saw him.
Yeah.
But you'd hear, Ron Nelson, you know, he's way ahead. He did this. It was like he was keeping the station afloat with the money he was bringing in, and we were all just, you know, pathetic peons that could only bring in a few bucks, right? So, anyway. This went on for years, and we would, I seem to remember we would get up at about four, it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but we'd do maybe $4,000, something like that. We'd raise $4,000. Believe me, at CKLN, with some of the shows that would be on, had better time slots, getting sometimes zero.
Yeah.
$4,000 is a lot of money compared to zero. And, so, anyway, at some point, we got access to actual figures. Oh, and every year, they'd have a meeting or something and say, and special thanks to Ron Nelson and Reggae Mania for, you know, bringing in, you know, some vast amount of money, right? And they give, you know, the board of CKLN gives special honors to Ron Nelson for his great contributions and so on. So anyway, at one point we got actual figures. When I say we got, I mean it wasn't like they were available. They gave us. Somehow we came across them. All right.
Yeah.
And what we found was that Nelson had huge pledged amount of money.
But none of it came in.
But he would only be getting about 20%. Of that money.
Yeah, I've completed pledging.
Yeah. In other words, people just phone and say, oh, yeah, I'll pledge, I'll pledge, you know, $6 trillion, you know. And then they'd go, okay, let's write up $6 trillion on the board. And he would get, his return rate was something like 20%. So all of this lauding of him as a great fundraiser was just complete fraud, and they knew it. They knew that he didn't bring the money in.
Right.
So we looked at the years that we had figures for. We saw we were way ahead of Nelson. We were bringing in far more money than Nelson was, because we were, our pledged money, we get 98% return on it. He'd be getting 20%, and yet they knew damn well what was going on, but they were trying to protect an image there, right? That this black man is keeping the whole station afloat. Isn't it great how wonderful the black race is? That, you know, it's all this racist stuff, really.
All
done by these white liberals, and of course Nelson just went right along with it. He's like, hey, if they're gonna say great things about me and I'm number one, well, who cares, right? But he knew damn well he wasn't bringing the money in. But he was bringing it in for himself.
Yeah.
So, and they were all thick as thieves there. And
let's end with that.
Yeah. Okay, Bob.
Okay, let me think. Do you have any music you'd like to play? I'm going to play another Ion recording eventually. But anything you want to hear?
Well, I like the stuff you play. I mean, what, like something? What era do you play? What is your favorite era?
Well, my favorite is Zappa.
Yeah, I know.
Can't play them all the time. So no, I have no favorites. I like I got a Count Basie. I have a Count Basie I start off with today. You know, that's the 40s and 50s or 60s, and then Jaco Pastorius, a famous bass player in the 80s, then Andy Stokansky's Baba Mal and Wanzer Zek, African people, and Ray Stevens.
Ray Stevens?
Yeah, you want to hear him do Misty?
Misty? Is that Ray Stevens, the one that did the joke songs?
Yeah. That's what you want to hear, don't you?
Sure, I mean, what does he do? He does a version of Misty?
Yeah. I'll play it out.
Okay,
stay on the air.
We'll see
what you think.
I'll hear that.
Yeah, I'm going to do it now. You stay. Don't hang up.
Yeah, okay. All
right. See what you think.
Okay.
Look at me.